This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, hour number two. We're following Orioles, Yankees, and a bunch of baseball tonight, previewing NBA Finals Game 7. We have a lot more to talk about, including the UFC. And if you're talking fights, you got to go to Super Dave Ross here on the VSiN Network, host of VSiN by the Book every morning. And Super Dave joins us now. I've said it once, I've said it a million times. If you don't like Dave Ross, something's wrong with you. He joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Super Dave, it's called UFC Fight Night on Saturday, but it's actually Fight Morning or Fight Afternoon. When do these fights start?
Okay, Matt, first of all, what a great intro. I appreciate that tremendously. It's over in Azerbaijan, which is a part of the country in the world that I've actually been in, I guess, close to in Saudi Arabia, and I'm not exactly sure still where it is. Wyatt Tomczak showed it to me on a map this morning on VSiN by the Books, and I'm still not sure where it is, but I know it's in a dangerous part of the world right now, so I hope everybody's going to be safe over there in Azerbaijan. We're going to get up early here in the West Coast, Matt. The prelim's going to start at 9 o'clock. Those are going to be on ESPN.
Wow.
And then it's going to switch over to ABC, to the network. So ABC is going to have it noon our time here, Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, and they chose violence on this card, gentlemen, because the co-main and the main event, I hope you're ready to see some blood early in the morning on a Saturday, because we're going to get some over there in Azerbaijan. I don't know how the co-main and the main event cannot whet the appetite. If you like a good scrap, you're going to get it over there overseas early Saturday morning.
Well, you know what? I don't know how the UFC picked this venue for this card, but that's something I guess you could explain later. I've never seen a UF card that's like a UFC card that's like a pillow fight, so I would expect there to be blood on this card. Can we talk about the main event, which is Jamahal Hill and Khalil Roundtree? And, Dave, I know you're going to break down. You probably got other best bets on the card, but break that one down first because that's the main event.
Ironically, Matt, it is my favorite fight on the card.
Is it?
And I played this early in the week on a Monday when Jamahal Hill was still plus $1.25. And now, as you see, we basically have co-favorites here, minus $1.10. I'll be surprised if Jamahal Hill isn't the smaller favorite come fight time tomorrow morning. So I still think it's a fair price on Jamahal at minus $1.10. And, gents, the way I look at it is two fighters that I have a lot of respect for, obviously, with the way they fight. And that is, it's going to be entertaining. These guys are going to come straight forward. We're not looking to grapple. And that's what I mean by it's hard to imagine that this fight doesn't deliver from an aesthetics point of view, because they're going to be standing right in front of each other in a phone booth, and can the better man knock the other guy out? I think that's what's going to happen here. Now, Khalil Roundtree, we haven't seen him in a long time since his last fight against Alex Pereira. And if you guys remember that fight, he basically won in the court of public opinion, even though he got stopped in that fourth round in his title bout. And nobody thought, myself included, that he had earned enough to get a shot against Alex Pereira for the light heavyweight championship of the world. But he looked so good, if you can imagine that, in taking a beating that night, that here he is again headlining a main event in another part of the world on ABC. That's a pretty big responsibility that the UFC is giving him. The problem here is he got battered in that fight, guys. And now all of a sudden you're going to go in there against another banger in Jamahal Hill. And I start to go, how many shots can you take? When does the durability that you have start to go out the window? And I think it might go here. And look, Jamahal Hill got knocked out in the first round against Alex Pereira when he fought as the champion back in the day. Remember, he was coming off the bad leg injury. He had been out for a year, maybe some ring rust there. But I would say it's better to get knocked out in the first round of a fight instead of going to a four-round war like Khalil Roundtree did against Pereira. I think it's easy to recover if you're Jamahal Hill. They call him Sweet Dreams for a reason, gentlemen. He's got real elite punching power here. Of course, Alex Pereira does too. But I think it's going to almost be like a fifth round against Pereira, and I don't know how many shots he's going to take. I didn't think he looked good on the scale, Khalil Roundtree. I thought he looked a little bit emaciated trying to make this weight. Guys, I'm also playing Jamahal Hill via KO. You can get that at circa behind you, Matt, right there at plus 205. I still think there's value in that number there, but two ways I'm going at it. Jamahal plus $1.25 in case it goes the distance. I think he would do enough on points. I don't see it going the distance, and that's why I like the KO prop, Jamahal Hill plus 205.
Dave, people always want to bet a little to win a lot, you know, recreational players or any of these big dogs that you think are live here on Saturday.
Yeah, I got a small dog that I do like in the co-main event, Will, and that's going to be Rafael Fiziev here against Ignacio Bahamondes. Bahamondes is a guy that wrecked one of the best betting cards I had the last time he out when he got Justin Turner out of there in a fight that I thought Justin Turner was going to win, and then Bahamondes was able to reverse the position and go ahead and get Julio Turner out of there. I don't think he's going to be able to do that against Fiziev. So Fiziev, if you can still find that dog money, Will, I think that's a really good value bet, and here's why. I'm talking about the other part of the world a lot. This is going to be Fiziev's backyard. Look at where the total is for that in that co-main event, which is a three-round fight. It's juiced heavily to the over. And so what I'm seeing here, guys, is the propensity that if it's a firefight, and Bahamondes is such an active fighter, and so is Fiziev, those wars he's had with Justin Gaethje, that if this thing does hit the cards, which is basically what the number is implying, I think, not saying there's home cooking, but I would say in a close fight, I'd rather be on the side of the dog there in Rafael Fiziev instead of laying the small price point with Bahamondes. If he can't get Rafael out, which I don't think he can, then give me Fiziev here. I think the plus money dog could cash there. I'll tell you a fight that I'm leery about, Will, for a bigger underdog here. It's a newcomer in Kamaev here against Curtis Razor Blades, Chicago's own Curtis Blades. And I know Curtis from my Chicago time. And his chin, Curtis's chin, is not great. So you got a newcomer to the UFC here as a big-time underdog, but you have to respect the number a little bit that he's only a $2 betting underdog here in his first time taking on a guy that's fought everybody in the heavyweight division, including Tom Aspinall. Curtis Blaydes, of course, that didn't end well for Curtis that night. And the thing is that sometimes fighters, I've seen it historically, Ronda Rousey, great judo practitioner, learned to throw hands, tried to throw hands with Holly Holm, Amanda Nunes, she gets knocked out. Curtis should not throw hands here against the newcomer. Wrestle. If Curtis wrestles, you're not in danger of laying him in a parlay piece at 265. If he fights with his hands, he could get knocked out. So if you're looking for potentially a live dog, it could be the newcomer there. Remember, that's the third fight in the main card. So the UFC is expecting something out of him. I still think Curtis wins the fight if he wrestles, and I think he neutralizes the power on the ground. Just don't get cute over there in Azerbaijan. If he doesn't, Curtis Blaydes wins, but I think there's danger in that big price point.
I know from doing shows with you that you're sometimes, I would say even often, surprised by scoring decisions. Is UFC a sport you bet live, you would recommend betting live, and if so, how?
You know what's crazy, Will, is you'll see fights right when they end. And the live number could be, if the fight hits the card and you think it's relatively close in your eyes and you see the live number closes for the favorite at -$5, absolutely, I won't get mad if you want to back the dog live, because I don't know what these judges see. And I'm not saying any of this, it's not. I know people always get on me and they're like, oh man, that was fixed or that the fix was in. No, it's not. Judges just see things differently than what we see. And they're supposed to judge on violence first. It's supposed to be damage as the number one criteria. And sometimes, guys, they don't use that criteria. So when a fight hits the cards, I say it every week, hold your breath if you're on a big favorite there, because sometimes you're going to get jobbed on a decision, and it's not anything by hook or by crook. It's just that judges sometimes do not judge on the actual criteria that the UFC outlines.
Dave, I haven't been following baseball the last week or so. How have the Mets been playing? Can you keep me posted on that?
That's good.
Matt, did you want to ask me about America's team behind me, the Cowboys? We're going to strike that from the record book.
I was going to say you could shoot back at Will and say, how have the Yankees fared over their last seven games?
Good point.
Yeah, the Yankees scored a run, Will, in that time? look, bad times right now for the Metropolitans. And I tell you, objects in the rear view with the Phillies, obviously, are right there now as they're neck and neck. You got to go up against the former Met and Zach Wheeler. I'm getting a little nervy, guys, that the Mets resuscitated the Braves. That's what I'm more concerned about. Phillies, if it's a two-horse race, that's fine. I just hope we didn't wake up the sleeping giant that is Atlanta, and they might have gotten right with that sweep of the Metropolitans.
Is Super Dave Ross, VSiN host, calling Captain America. He's got the American flag behind him, Cowboys helmet, Mets hat. And we're going to talk golf here to wrap it up. We'll save the Cowboys and the NFL futures talk for another day, Super Dave. How about golf? You like to bet golf on Friday nights. Right now at the Travelers Tournament, Travelers Championship in Connecticut, we got a three-way tie at the top. Scottie Scheffler, no surprise. JT, Justin Thomas, rising up the leaderboard. And how about Tommy Fleetwood trying to win his first ever PGA Tour event? Dave, what are you looking to bet here on Friday night, headed to the weekend in the golf tournament?
Jensen and I, this morning on By the Books, we workshopped this, Matt, and we went with Tommy Fleetwood, winner without market.
Okay.
You know this, Matt. He's not going to win. Tommy Fleetwood's not going to win. He's going to finish probably second or third here. Uh-huh. So really, it's like, can you beat Justin Thomas? That was about 18-1 this morning. You could have got that winner without market with Tommy Fleetwood. I'll say this, and I've got a big ticket on him, 105-1. Little Denny McCarthy. Watch out for Denny, UVA's own. It's a small course, Matt, as you know. He's an underrated iron player. He doesn't get to do that he deserves for his iron play. It's gotten a lot better, but he might be the best putter on tour, as you well know. I think Denny's really live if Scotty doesn't slam the door shut on everybody over the weekend.
I think you're right. Denny McCarthy was 6-under today. I watched the tournament. I've got Keegan Bradley. You've got Denny McCarthy, who I almost bet but didn't. So best of luck, Super Dave. Captain America, always appreciate your time on a Friday night.
Appreciate it, boys. Always love shooting the you-know-what with you guys.
Check the VSIN Pro page for Dave Ross's best bets on the UFC fight night, which is actually fight morning or fight afternoon on Saturday. I know Mitch Moss is fired up for that card. Will Hill and I back to talk more about NBA Finals Game 7 and baseball updates. We got some news in New York.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Off to a great start tonight with the professor, Aaron Moore, and Captain America, Super Dave Ross, on the show. Coming up later, Sam Chowdhury on the NBA and Casanova Chris Massaro also on the NBA in the final hour tonight. Will Hill, the Orioles came into the Bronx tonight, 10 games under 500, jumped up 2-0 on the Yankees in the first inning. Where do we stand now, and what has Aaron Judge done for you lately?
Home run, Aaron Judge. Stop me if you've heard that before. Got a good swing on a pitch from Shigano here, and he drives it out of the ballpark. So that average, which was flirting around the 400 mark, really for the better part of this season, all the way down to 366, I saw, I think, coming into the game. So he has been slumping. Look, nobody's going to hit 400 this day and age, but he is back on track here in the Yankees. Three runs on the board, two men on, with a chance for more runs here in the third. So that Yankee slump here, possibly is a thing of the past here. Yankees, look, Yankees 1-9 have a pretty good offense. It's not a great offense. There's some holes in it, but they're nowhere near the team they were the last week or so, where they couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag against the Angels and the Red Sox. You and I talked about this. It's just, look, it's a long season. Teams are going to go through slumps. What's more concerning, you know, from my perspective, is just the boneheaded baseball they play in terms of base running, not being able to bunt, making the first and last out at third base, bad defense, the hitting, they'll be fine. It comes and goes, team slump, but maybe back on track here for the Bronx Bombers.
To stick to what works, keep chewing gum, Aaron Boone, and things will work out in the end. Yankees up 3-2 here, runners on first and second, two outs, and Austin Wells at the plate. Shugano has a pitcher we thought the Yankees could hit tonight, and so far they're doing that. 3-2. Yankees bet up as high as -340 here at Circa right before the first pitch tonight. Will, you mentioned Jacob DeGrom. Rangers on top of the Pirates, 4-2 in the top of the sixth. Do you feel like DeGrom is back to the point where you can bet him like one of the elite pitchers in baseball, or is he not quite there yet? Does he still got more to prove to you?
85-90%. He doesn't have the video game strikeouts, the video game velocity where he's throwing 102 and striking out 12-13 guys, but he's been super effective. I would say it's a quiet, I think he had like a 2.15 ERA coming into the game. So look, nothing wrong with that. And we say the velocity has ticked down, which it has. He's still throwing 97-98. It was interesting. He retired the first eight batters he faced. And then the ninth guy, I think he had a 1-2 count on him. That guy reached base, and the next four guys reached base, and the Pirates were able to scratch across a couple runs, but he did get 1-2-3 in the bottom of the fifth. So he's pitched really well. Is he, you know, the dominant guy he was pre-injuries? No, but look, 85-90% of that guy, as long as he's healthy and he can maintain this, that's plenty. What's interesting going forward here, Would they entertain a team that's three games under 500? Nobody's out of it. Would they entertain trading him here, saying, all right, we got him healthy, we're not any good? Probably not, but that's at least something that I've heard whispers about. That look, if you could get a haul back, which I'm sure you would for DeGrom, that would be a hell of a piece if that were the direction Texas wanted to go. But I'm not sure they're going that direction.
Well, when you talk about pitchers who could be difference makers at the trade deadline, how many are out there? Because Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins is going to be a guy. If Alcantara continues to pitch well and the arrows have been pointing in the right direction for him lately, but you still have to have some questions about him. How many pitchers out there do you think are real difference makers if the Yankees or another team wanted to pick up a grade A arm at the deadline?
Not many, because there's not that many teams out of it. These teams with the extra wild card spots, I mean, everybody's basically a contender or can talk themselves into a contender. I mean, you have the obvious ones, the Rockies. Who do you want there? Do you really want Kyle Freeland or Herman Marquez? Is that pitcher changing your life? Maybe a change of scenery, they'll be better. But, I mean, you get the idea. Rockies, Marlins, White Sox. Other than that, I mean, there's a couple teams here and there, but you're not going to get big-time pitchers. There's just not that many sellers anymore. And the fact that there's not that many sellers, these teams want a fortune for their pitchers because they feel like they're in a position of power with all of these teams that are – there's more buyers than sellers. So if you were able to make up your mind, if you decided to go that direction, DeGrom could really swing a pennant race. I'm not sure. I would say that's still unlikely, but it's at least something that's worth thinking about here as Texas is just kind of been in fits and starts. They start to look like they're going to get going, and they don't. They've struggled to score runs. Eovaldi's been hurt. They just haven't clicked on all cylinders for whatever reason this season.
Well, let's keep talking baseball here, and I'm going to keep it with the pitching theme. One player who might be moved at the deadline. Now, the D-backs are not out of it yet by any stretch. They're eight games back in the West, but Zach Gallen is a pitcher I've heard might be on the trading block at some point. Gallen's going to start for the D-backs tonight at Coors Field. Gomber for the Rockies. D-backs minus 160 or a little bit higher. Total of 11.5. How do you feel about Zach Gallen? And did you handicap D-backs, Rockies, anything worth playing there? The Rockies have been hot, Will. Don't look now, but the Rockies manager just said the other day, don't let us get hot.
Yeah, and he's done a decent job for all of the people. So Bud Block didn't deserve to get fired. He didn't do anything wrong. Well, they've played pretty well. They played much better without him than they did with him, for whatever that's worth. We can argue and have our differences about how much these managers really matter, especially on a really bad team like Colorado. But as far as this game, it's ticked down to 11.5 in most spots, but this was the first 12 I think I've seen all year. 12 for a baseball game is pretty damn high, but it's justified. Like you said, Gowan hasn't been good. Rockies have swung the bats well. Arizona's got a good lineup. Coors Field, it's 95 degrees. Wind is blowing out. So, it's anytime you see a total this high, and it goes to baseball, but it goes to anything, college basketball, college football, any of these sports, there's usually a reason it's high. It's usually justified. And I know there's an old handicapping, philosophy that you go over the highest total on the board, you go under the lowest total on the board. I don't know how much that's driven or backed by data, but as far as this game, Gowan under 17.5 outs recorded at plus money is one I like. He gets his pitch count up. He can walk guys. I think he'll struggle in that ballpark. Colorado's been swinging pretty good bats. So to get through six full innings in these hitting conditions, I think will be tough. You're getting plus money under 17.5 outs. So I do think that's one way to attack it.
You know what's crazy about the Rockies, Will? They tied a franchise record with seven home runs in a game a few days ago. But it was not at Coors Field. You would think that the Rockies franchise record for homers would be at Coors. It was not. It was at Washington against the Nationals. And the Nationals had just dropped 11 in a row. How about the Rockies? Four out of five. They've won four out of the past five. Not setting the world on fire. But, again, they're at the point now where you just can't bet against the Rockies every day. And I can understand why so many bettors were, playing against the Rockies on their parlays or playing against the Rockies in some form basically every day of the week. You can't do that now. They're playing better baseball. And like I said, 4-1 in the past five games.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing with Coors, too, it's not even the balls leaving the ballpark that makes it so hitter-friendly. A lot of it's just the elevation makes the ball not break as much on the curveballs and the breaking stuff. Right. The gaps are big, so they'll just single W to death, and the breaking stuff doesn't move as much. But, yeah, Colorado, I mean, there's a reason teams don't go 20-142. It's baseball. It's a long season. Even the worst teams, the worst teams are going to win a third of its games. I know we thought the Rockies maybe a 35 kind of win team. I don't know. I don't know that you stray that much for it. But when you start winning four out of five, it's hard to be that bad. You're probably going to find yourself in a position where they get like 38, 40 wins, something like that. I know books have just said, you know what, no mas. We're not putting up any more over-under season win totals for the Rockies. We're done with it. Nobody's betting the over. It's one-way action. So, I don't know, 38, 40 win team. But enough wins here and there when you're talking about these big, big prices. All it takes is a few wins here and there, and the people that are throwing their opponent in moneyline parlays get scared off.
All right, we've got this graphic up here on the Rockies. This is via DraftKings. Current record 17-58. Odds to make the playoffs 40-1. Is that a joke? That's got to be that's got to be a typo. It should.
Is there a no make playoffs?
Can you bet the no? Because you just lay whatever you want to on the no to make the playoffs 40-1. That should be at least 400-1. They're not making the playoffs. They're 30 games under 500. 40 games under 500. They're not making the playoffs, and they're 40-1 odds. That's comical. Minus 20,000 on the no. Well, free money. You want to bet it?
Yeah, I mean, that's
you just have to wait.
If you didn't mind tying up your money, that's we don't use the word lock in sports betting.
That's actually a lock.
There's no chance they make the playoffs. Yes.
Do you mind waiting 4 months to get your money back? That's the problem. You talk about bad teams, so. White Sox were historically bad a year ago. Right now, 23-52, and pretty good tonight. Top of the fifth inning in Toronto. White Sox up on the Blue Jays 7-0. So don't look now, but the Rockies and the White Sox suddenly playing decent baseball. Ready? If you're ready to get in on the action, First Bet has you covered. Sign up now to access exclusive promotions and bet on hundreds of thrilling horse races every day right from your phone or computer. Visit firstbet.com. That's the number one. STBet.com. Use promo code VSIN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Start betting today at firstbet.com. All right, Will Hill, Matt Eumanns here. We're going to talk Tyrese Halliburton. Not much talk about Halliburton's injury last night. Very suspicious, right? He was supposed to be a game-time decision. Maybe couldn't go. Played well. Nobody's talking about the injury now. Let's talk about Halliburton and the Pacers heading into Game 7 in Oklahoma City. Quick break, back here in a couple minutes on VSIN Primetime.
This is VSIN Primetime on VSIN, the sports betting network.
A lot of talk about Pacers point guard Tyrese Halliburton prior to Game 6 in Indianapolis on Thursday night. Not much talk about Halliburton after, at least not much talk about his injury. 23 minutes, 5 for 12 from the field, hit 3 three-pointers, 14 points, 5 assists, played a pretty solid all-around game and only turned the ball over one time. Will Hill, why did we not hear much about Halliburton's injury during the game when that was all the talk pregame last night? Do you think maybe the injury was exaggerated?
Or he is... just an incredibly fast healer, the 2 days off in between games, and he's all better. He even said, hey, if this was a regular season, I would miss multiple weeks, I believe was the quote, and now he was good to go. And it's not like he was playing off the ball, a little bit decoy, but he looked fine. He was moving around. You made the comment, which I thought was a good observation. He was putting on a dribbling display early, so it didn't look like the calf was bothering him. Was it an excuse for Game 5? Was it gamesmanship? All right, let's get in OKC's head. Let's make him think our best player or co-best player here can't really play, isn't going to be 100%, and then he'll come out and he'll be ready to go, and we'll catch him off guard. I'm not sure, but he looked pretty good last night.
He didn't look like he was hampered by that injury at all. Talking about the strained right calf and sore right ankle, I didn't see any effects of the injury at all. He was moving around fine. Even when he ran out to the court in pregame for warm-ups, I thought he looked good. And then he put on that Globetrotters exhibition early in the game where dribbling around, spinning around, driving into the lane. It didn't look like he had any issues with the injury, which is really suspicious when he says, you know, if this was regular season, I'd be out for a couple weeks. I don't know what the hell was going on there, but I think the Pacers were playing up the injury for more than it was worth, and maybe that was on purpose. Anyway, J.A. Scott sent this tweet to me today, and I have to give him credit. Tyrese Halliburton was seen boarding the Pacers' flight to Oklahoma City today And there's some video of him carrying a bag of Culver's fast food to the plane. Wow. And you have to love this. I mean, this has got to be a check mark in the Pacers category here. If Halliburton's going to be fueled by Culver's on this trip to OKC, I'm starting to like the Pacers a little bit more. Will, have you had a chance to go to Culver's? Have you had the butter burgers? Have you taken your kids to Culver's yet?
Yes, yes, and yes. The cheese curds, the butter burgers, good size, good milkshakes. Or they have, custard? A-plus, about as good as it gets when it comes to fast food. It's in elite territory, elite company. But you bring up a good point. What would you say the Culver's trip is worth to the Lions? Got to be worth a half a point at least, right?
You nailed it. I was going to say a half point. And I think that's why the betting market today dropped from 8 to 7.5. Don't you?
Yeah, it's a justified adjustment.
Okay. So the last night, a number opened 8.5, which is exactly what you thought it was going to be. I said 8. Now it's down to 7.5. But the total is an interesting aspect here, too. And again, Halliburton's a key for the Pacers when they're trying to push the pace. And that's what they want to do against OKC. Matt Jacob, a sports betting writer in Las Vegas, put this out today, and I thought it was really interesting. Total points scored in the last 11 Game 7s of the NBA Finals. Are you ready for this, Will Hill? Last 11 yes. Game 7s of the NBA Finals, going back to 1966. 188 total points that year. 1969, 214. 1974, 189. 1978, 204. 1984, these were the glory days for the NBA. 1984, yeah. 213. 1988, 213. Now we get into some ugly basketball in the 90s. 1994, 174 points scored in Game 7 of the NBA Finals that year. 174, huge drop-off. Well, how about 2005, 155 points. 2010, 162. 2013, 183. 2016, 182. Boy, those are some low numbers. Will, that backs up a point you were making last night. You thought the total was going to open lower than 220 because of the history of low-scoring Game 7s. Right now we see a total of anywhere from 214 to 215.
Yeah, they have certainly built in the Game 7 under angle. Couple that with the fact that these games lately have trended under. Game 6 going way, way under 198. But you can just look at it and say Game 7s go under. Okay, I buy it. I don't necessarily want a piece of the over. But when it's built into the line, it's hard to say there's still value on the under. Now, maybe you feel differently, but when you're talking about Game 1 being 231, 231.5, and here we are just 2 weeks later, same teams, no injuries, nothing. I mean, outside of the Halliburton issue, a 16-point adjustment for the same teams. It's hard to still fire on that under. That being said, I don't really want any piece of the over here. So what are your thoughts on the total? Is this adjusted too much in your opinion?
That's not adjusted too much, I don't think. When you look at this chart that Matt Jacob put together, 2005, again, NBA Finals, Game 7s, total points scored, 2005, 155. 2010, 162. We talked last night about that ugly game between the Lakers and the Celtics in that Game 7. 2013, 183, and 2016, 182. I don't think the game's changed that much, Will. Those numbers don't lie. Game 7s are tight. They're more defensive. Teams are conservative. There's a lot more pressure on these teams in Game 7. So I think you can account for maybe a five-point adjustment here in the total down to 215. Interesting thing to me is going to be how this plays out when you have a Pacers offense that really wants to push the pace and you have an OKC side that you know is going to make a parade to the free throw line all night. Scott Foster apparently has been named to the officiating crew in Game 7. The officials are going to micromanage this Game 7. I would bet on a bunch of free throw attempts for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder. So maybe that could impact the total. Would that concern you, Will? When you look at this total and you want to play under, you know the Pacers want to push it, and you know the Thunder are going to make a bunch of trips to the free throw line.
It would absolutely concern me because we were doing the show Game 4 Friday night a week ago, and Scott Foster thinks he was the show. I mean, he thought he was everyone was there to see him, and he was blowing that whistle left and right. Each team shot a million free throws, and there's nothing worse for an under then free throws. The ball goes through the hoop and the clock is stopped. When you're betting an under, you're betting a total either way. You're betting against that clock and the whistle stops the clock. You get into the bonus earlier. That would make me nervous from an under perspective that Foster is whistle happy and thinks we're all there to see him. It's game seven. He's on the biggest stage and he's blowing that whistle left and right. That would be very concerning from an under perspective.
All right, let's talk more about Tyrese Halliburton. 23 points on supposedly one leg. He looked pretty good last night. 23 minutes, 14 points in those 23 minutes, and he had five assists and he hit three threes, only had one turnover. Let's hear from Halliburton talking about playing through, how he played through the injury.
I mean, I just look at it as, you know, I want to be out there to compete with my brothers. You know, these are guys that I'm willing to go to war with. And we've had such a special year and we have a special bond as a group. And, you know, I think I'd beat myself up if I didn't give it a chance, you know. And, you know, I just wanted to be out there and fight, and just had to have an honest conversation with the coach that, you know, if I didn't look like myself and, you know, was hurting the team, like, sit me down. Like, that's obviously I want to be on the floor, but I want to win, you know, more than anything. So I just had to have an honest conversation with coach. But yeah, I want to be on the floor. And if I have the ability to, if I can, like I said, if I can walk, then I want to be out there. So, you know.
He could not only walk, he was running like a deer. And he played 23 minutes, had 14 points, and played well. One of his better games of the finals with three three-pointers made last night for a Pacers team that shot 15 for 42 from three. The Pacers really have not shot the lights out from three. They're going to have to do that in Game 7 if they're going to win on the road on Sunday night. But, Will, your take on Halliburton. I always expected him to play because it's such a big game, Game 6. I thought he would play. If he was ineffective, maybe he would get benched. That was not the case. He was very effective from the get-go, and he showed no signs of the injury.
I thought he would play, too. I expected him to play as well. Didn't really know what we'd see. I mean, he was so bad in Game 5. I thought he couldn't be as bad as that in Game 6, but didn't really know. I mean, it's hard. Talking about injuries, you're talking about trying to evaluate somebody else's pain. It's, I mean, you can watch him run. You can watch these other things, but it's hard to really project that. But look, he played Monday, and then Tuesday off, Wednesday off. By Thursday, he looked much better. So I think, and I'm curious what you think, I think going into Sunday, it's basically, it can't be part of your handicap, right? I mean, you can't really use this as an injury or downgrade Indy. You just basically, all right, maybe he's 80-90%, but I don't think of it as much of a factor here heading into Game 7.
You made a good point last night. You said you could buy low on Halliburton's points prop, and it was 12.5, but that was risky. We didn't know if he was, you know, seriously in jeopardy of not playing many minutes and getting benched because he was injured. Well, it turned out he was fine. He went over the points total. Will, now it's 15.5 for Game 7. What do you think about that?
Haven't played it. Seems like the right adjustment. I mean, now we're in OKC, and he's had some of these disappearing acts. He's just such a hot and cold player that it's really hard to bet with confidence knowing what you're going to get from him.
Hey, who was hot for the Pacers last night? It was Obi Toppin. He had four threes and had 20 points. The former Knick helping the Pacers get to Game 7. Will Hill made a long shot bet on MVP. And we're going to give you some numbers to back that up here after the break. And baseball updates, Orioles, Yankees, and more here on VSiN Primetime.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, Will Hill, Matt Youmans here. As we're wrapping up hour number two on a Friday night, VSiN Prime Time. Will, tell me which player had this stat line from the Pacers' 108-91 victory over the Thunder on Thursday night. 12 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals. Who put that line together?
Sounds like the pride of Duquesne as well as the University of Arizona, TJ McConnell, who had his moments in Game 5, had another brief stint here in Game 6 where he gave the Pacers some life. Good plays on defense, good plays on offense, and he's been a real spark plug here for the Pacers, McConnell. So I think it's Mr. McConnell here.
Good call. Good call. And how about this? This is from StatMuse here. TJ McConnell is the first bench player in NBA history with 60 or more points, 25 or more assists, and 15 or more rebounds in an NBA Finals. Could TJ McConnell be the MVP? Will, talk about the bet you made last night during the game. where it stands now and what you think McConnell's chances are headed into game seven on Sunday night.
Yeah, grabbed McConnell 140-1. This was deliberating after it was 150-1, maybe a little bit higher. This was passing on the Pacers 12-1 to win the series. So I said, you know what? I have some regret about not betting the Pacers after talking about it nonstop before the game at 12-1. I'm not going to regret this. At 140-1, I'm going to take a shot. It's probably not going to win, but who knows? Maybe I have a chance to get a cash out. Maybe he's in the mix. It's a little more wide open than it usually is in terms of finals MVP. Siakam's the favorite. He's a rightful favorite, but it's been such an even series that who knows? In a game seven where anything can happen, and game seven is going to carry so much weight. If McConnell can, you know, have one of these games where he scores 20-something points and puts up a bunch of rebounds, assists, who knows? I don't think he's necessarily going to win. But Halliburton's had a couple of stinkers. Siakam, again, he's been good. He's the favorite for the Pacers if they win, and I understand that. But I think it's just wide open where the 140-1 was enough for me to take a chance. He didn't play well from that point forward. He had kind of a quiet second half. And, of course, all the starters for both teams sat. But, again, I think you go into Game 7 here where it's not a lock. We don't really know who's going to win MVP. It's probably SGA for the Thunder. But if the Pacers win, we can have a conversation at least.
Well, the Pacers were up 22 points at halftime and 30 points after three quarters, so it's not like McConnell had to put up big numbers in the second half.
Right.
I thought his stat line was as impressive as any last time. We talked about 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals to go with his 12 points in 24 minutes. He was 6 of 12 from the floor. Plus, he's a facilitator on offense, drives the lane, breaks down the defense, makes plays. I like the way he pushes the pace on the break and the way he executes the half-court offense. Well, when I look at this odds board here, odds to win the finals MVP, I got a question for you. How in the hell is Tyrese Halliburton 12-1 and TJ McConnell is 130-1?
Probably just name recognition, the game one shot. You know, maybe some narrative, the fact that he's their superstar to begin with. He's had a good postseason, which shouldn't factor into it. But I'm with you. I think that these two players should not be as far apart as they are.
Halliburton's had a couple no-show games.
Sure.
So what do you need here to cash this McConnell MVP long shot play, which you don't expect to hit, but you got a chance? Do you need TJ McConnell to put up almost a near triple-double again in Game 7? Is he gonna will he have to hit the winning shot? It's going to be something like that, right?
Some combination of those things. I don't know that I'm eligible to be on the panel to get a vote, but maybe that would certainly help. Maybe some of the McConnell family members on the panel, but no, you got the right idea. Triple-double, a big statistical game, a game winner, a night where Halliburton and or Siakam are quiet. And then who knows, recency bias, game seven, people get caught up in the story, and then maybe it goes to McConnell. So it's, again, I do think it's pretty wide open. Would you, do you see a bet on this board? If you, is this anything where you're intrigued by any of these numbers as they currently stand?
Well, I think you got a pretty good bet in your pocket on McConnell. He was worth a long shot play. You didn't have to make a big bet at that odds. I believe if the Pacers pull off the upset, Pascal Siakam's probably going to be the MVP, unless Halliburton hits another game-winning shot. If he has two game-winning shots in the series, he's probably going to be MVP. He would be. But Pascal Siakam right now has been the most consistent Pacer. When you look at why they're 3-3, Siakam and McConnell have been great for the Pacers throughout the series. I think the most consistent players have been Siakam and McConnell, and that's why they've been able to force a game seven. Now, Pascal Siakam's at plus 390. He's off a game where he had 16 points and 13 rebounds, and he had most of his points early. He didn't have to score late after the Pacers had the 30-point lead. So that's where it goes right now. I think if the Pacers win, it's probably Siakam. Halliburton would have to hit a winning shot, and you got a shot with a McConnell at triple digits. For the Thunder here, there was some talk that Jalen Williams could steal the MVP after his 40-point game in Game 5. I really didn't think that was going to happen. I still believe if the Thunder win, it's almost a lock that it's SGA to win MVP. Do you think so?
Yeah, I have a hard time. First of all, if the Thunder are going to win, it's probably because SGA has a big game.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
If it's close, tie goes to the superstar. Same with the quarterback. I mean, people are he won the league MVP, and he's had a pretty good series. Not a great series, but a pretty good series. They're going to win Game 7, MVP for the regular season. You're going to give it to somebody else. The voters usually don't go in that direction. Remember a couple years ago, it's the Eastern Conference Finals. It could have been Butler or you know, one of the Martin twins. I think Caleb Martin. Martin had a valid case based on the stats, the numbers, but the tie goes to the superstar. Butler got it. I would expect the same here. I'd be shocked if SGA didn't get it.
All right, let's do some baseball updates here to wrap up the hour. Will, the Orioles scored twice in the top of the first. Yankees got two in the bottom. The game has really slowed down since then. We have only an Aaron Judge solo homer. Bottom of the fifth, Orioles 3, Yankees 2. Max Fried.
Yeah, shaky
at the start tonight, but Max Fried has settled down.
Yeah, and a strange rally for in the first inning for the Orioles. Very rarely do you see two hit-by-pitches in the same inning, and that's what started the inning, a single, the two hit-by-pitches. Then with two out, old Yankee friend Gary Sanchez, who was a prize prospect and had some moments for the Yankees, but just his career fizzled out. But he's always been able to hit a little bit. It's been the defense, it's been the other things with Sanchez. But he got a base hit. Yankees answered with two in the bottom of the first, the Judge homer, and that's been it. It looked like first inning, Yankees had a chance to maybe bust this open because they had a run in. They had bases loaded. They had nobody out. It looked like an inning where the Yankees could maybe, bust out and put up a four or five spot. But considering where we were in the first inning, this game, like you said, is really, really slowed down in terms of the scoring. But we're only halfway through, bottom of the fifth. Yankees coming to bat now, Stanton at the plate for the Yankees.
All right, you were giving Super Dave Ross a hard time. He's a Mets fan. Yeah. When he was on with us earlier in the show, the Mets are really struggling, and Will, they're down again tonight. Phillies 2, Mets 0, bottom of the fifth. Why do you think the Mets are playing bad baseball all of a sudden?
Similar to the Yankees, where it's part of it's the schedule. Braves in Atlanta is a tough spot. Atlanta was due to play better. Some of their pitchers are hurt. I mean, you don't have Kodai Senga. You don't have McGill. They're starting a guy, Tidwell, tonight, who I've never heard of, and you're going against Wheeler. You know what? Wheeler's going to be favored. It's going to be hard to beat Wheeler with a guy making his first start here in Tidwell. So part of it's the schedule. Part of it, look, it's baseball. It's 162. These slumps are going to happen. And their pitching, I think, is a concern now. When you're losing 40% of your rotation, and your rotation, even though it's performed well, is not exactly filled with a bunch of big names. You're kind of duct taping it together with the Griffin Cannings and David Petersons of the world. And I like Peterson, and these guys have all thrown the ball well, but how long, can they sustain it, I think, is the question. So a little bit schedule, a little bit just, bad baseball teams are going to go through it. But for a team that was five games up like a week ago, they're about to be a game out of first and looking at a seven-game losing streak here. So the tables have really turned here on the Mets.
Zach Wheeler was another bet I thought about making today. But, man, Will, that's such a square play. You don't want to get into the habit of laying 185 in baseball games. But Wheeler and the Phillies minus 185 against the Mets tonight. You had a huge pitching advantage in that game. That was tough to turn down, but I did not make the bet. White Sox up on the Blue Jays 7-0. In Toronto, and we have five games on the West Coast tonight that we're going to break down in the next hour before they start. D-backs have an early lead on the Rockies, 1-0 at Coors Field in Colorado. Will, anything else in the world of baseball going on right now that you have action on or you have your eyes on?
No, but one thing I noticed is that, if you're one of these people that likes to moneyline parlay the favorites and you want to find something with the Thunder, I don't want to lay the 7.5, but I think they'll win. You had a lot of options tonight. You could have thrown DeGrom and the Rangers in there against the Pirates. You could have thrown Wheeler in there. You could have thrown the Yankees with Fried. Hunter Brown's going later against the Angels. So a lot of aces going tonight. A lot of, I don't want to lay 170, 180, $2, whatever the case is, but you couple it with OKC, and who knows? Even if you don't like OKC, on Sunday, you could just come back with the Pacers plus the points and set up a nice little middle. So those are things always to look at here.
Got a promo you want to read for us?
Early bird special. We will get to that here now. If you want to make smarter bets this season, start with VSiN Pro for a limited time. Grab our football special at the early bird rate of just $175, giving you full access from now through the Super Bowl. Includes our NFL betting guide, the ultimate playbook with team breakdowns, power ratings, season-long best bets. You'll also get a daily best bets email from our expert hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app, deep analytics and betting tools on VSiN.com. Don't miss the early bird special. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to lock it in. VSIN.com/subscribe. We will be back right after this.